Is she for or against?
Okay,
I don't know.
And there is another thing here too. The greenhouses are affected by it. And I do have. Oh, I have one more farm still in existence. I forgot about Goat Lady.
The Community Regional Affairs Committee will come to order on.
Let's remember.
It wasn't started. You want to restart it? On the 21st of March at 3:18, Independence, Representative Phillip, Representative Cato, Representative McBride, and myself, Representative Miller. Today we have on the calendar House Bill 625, an act relating to municipal taxation of agricultural lands. And we have done a lot of research, and we also have in your packet a proposed committee substitute. And if I could have a motion to adopt
it. Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the proposed committee substitute.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. To briefly explain the bill, maybe I should turn it over to staff and let Shirley explain it, and I can fill in any parts, or hopefully I can fill in any parts. I think she has done quite a bit of work on this. And
committee members, we got involved in changing this bill to a committee substitute through some letters which you have in your packet, and they are from some of the constituency out there, and they wanted to have us look into section B actually, of which is the filing date, the mandatory filing date each year. I went to Fairbanks last weekend and talked with several people, and their problem with the May 15th date of filing was the fact that if they missed that May 15th date of filing for some reason or other, they would lose their assessment for the whole year. So I also contacted the assessors, both local and state assessors, and they had very good reasons also for keeping the filing date, mainly because it was the only way that the local assessors could be sure that there was going to be a parity. What they saw as farmland really was farmland, but since the January 1st date is actually the date that they're supposed to look at the assessment of farmland, a lot of times it was under 20 feet of snow, et cetera, et cetera. So they decided that if they could just have a simple filing, they put their notes in, they match them up with what the filings are, and then if there's any great disparity of between the two sets of notes, then they call the farmers in and talk to them about whether the land is really in farm use at all. And so in doing that, we found in trying to make it so that the farmers would not lose through their own fault or otherwise their assessment for the year, we have added in section 2 the words, during the same year, however, the governing body of the municipality may, for good cause shown, waive the owner's failure to make timely application for the assessment for that year and authorize the assessor to accept the application as if timely filed. That puts it squarely up to the local body to accept or deny. And since this language is already in other legislation at this time, other statutes over other filings, it's not something that's brand new, and it seems to work very well from what I've been able to discern from CNRA. In the section 1, this also is part of the committee substitute. In talking with CNRA, they have asked that we consider changing the way the penalty payment, to something that would be more equitable with the changing times. Their idea at first was to go ahead and go to from an 8% levy to a 10, 15, as high as 20, because that's what some of the penalties are in other different filing types or tax situations. In discussing it with Mr. Worley of the State Assessor's Office, we found that they were compounding the rate of interest for one thing, which seemed excessive, especially if you got up to the 15 and 20% level. And so we asked that the current mill levy be stricken from the legislation and a simple rate of interest equal to the prime rate as determined by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation plus 1% would probably make it so that no one was making a lot of money by putting their tax money into the bank and drawing interest, et cetera, on it. And that was their main fear, why they wanted to take the 8% and make it higher. By tying it to the prime rate, it fluctuates, and no farmer or group of farmers, et cetera, or landowners will be able to make a whole lot of money by not paying their taxes. However, they won't be excessively taxed and penalized because they decide to take their land out of the farm use status. The Section 3 was part of Representative Kopanen's bill in the first place, and this was asked for by of Representative Kopanen by some farmers in the North Pole area and Fairbanks area, and it basically had to do with the people who are not making 10% of their income. We've all heard the stories about the farmers in Delta and their crops being ruined, and it just doesn't have to be the farmers in Delta. It could be anyone that had a flood on his land or bad crops that year. He would lose his tax assessment and therefore be penalized for being a failure, which he really didn't, I mean, it wasn't his fault that the crops failed, etc. So you'd be penalizing him twice, and that was the reason that they asked that that the 10% be dropped. And there are many farmers who are farming, especially in the first 7 years, that are spending much of their outside income just trying to get their farm going to a point where it is able to handle itself. The Community and Regional Affairs Department had no problem with dropping the 10% or the filing of it. The Part 5 is a piece that we're going to see more and more on because it just prorates the appropriations if they're shortfalls. And it's something that CNRA tells me that it's going to happen more and more with more legislation. As pieces of legislation come up where they can insert this to stop unnecessary legislation, you know, more like the special legislation that we have coming up on the senior citizens to take care of the shortfall. By inserting this language, that will automatically, the prorating will be automatic. Is there any questions? I hope I've explained it.
On the part about late filing, that is true. It's true on senior housing. It's true on a number of things. So I have not a problem with that. That's the exact same language. But on line 21 of page 2, can you tell me what that really says? It says, the provisions of this section do not apply to land respecting which the owner has granted and has outstanding a lease or option to buy the surface right. Is that?
I think I'd like to defer to Lisa.
That presently is in statute right now.
What does that mean? Do not apply to land respecting which the owner has granted. Are you sure we haven't left that a word?
Has been granted?
Let's see if we got statute what line here.
Line 21.
Maybe
it's there. Respecting, you don't say respecting which. I'm respecting which you.
All right, so that's the
line. What does it mean?
How does it pertain to?
In your package should be a copy of that statute.
Right, it's right here. It is in statute as currently written. The provisions of this section do not apply to land respecting which the owner has granted and has outstanding a lease or option to buy the surface right.
The owner has granted a lease without an outstanding lease.
I suppose that would be because at any time someone would come in and decide to develop surface rights and that would affect its farm use. It's obviously difficult to have planted farm use that's existing for surface.
Respecting that particular land, Jack, is what...
Yeah, but you don't say respecting...
Which the owner has granted.
Yeah, but then isn't that what you would say? Maybe I'm just...
Maybe it should be a comma there.
I don't know. Anyway, if it's in the old one, it must be...
The language is correct. I mean, as far as it's just difficult to be able to link together sometimes.
Maybe it's just that common there to respect it.
Then I guess I have a problem, maybe you can discuss it a little bit. On line 23, a property owner wishing to file for farm use classification having no history of farm-related activity. Now, does that mean the person, the property owner, or does it mean that the land has no history of being farmed?
It's my understanding that it is the person.
That is.
He has to file it in an intent.
Okay, and then what would happen a year later if he didn't follow up his intent?
You mean if he didn't make a success of it?
Well,
he didn't do what
he said he was going to do. I suppose you'd ask him what he was going to do.
Well, the following year he has to, by February 1st, put in a notarized statement saying that he did this, and if he didn't, I would suspect he would be, you know, illegal.
Revert back just to section 1 where he gets hit with the excerpt that he hasn't.
Okay, then I had one more question. On the first page when you talk about the interest, what happens to that interest money? Does that go to the borough? Because he would have that taxes would go to the borough.
Right.
Okay, now what if the borough has a different tax schedule? They have to abide by this, and that's what they're doing.
Well, no, the borough, from what I understand, Representative McBride had left that up to the department, and they were just following along with the 8% on this land, on this type of land. And so they were guided by the state's guidelines in this statute.
The reason I ask this question is, if you don't pay your taxes, now we don't have any farmland at the present time, at least in my borough, if you don't pay your taxes on time, there's a fee of $40 plus interest, and then they have their rate of interest, which I couldn't tell you what it is. So, you know, if you went back 7 years, I suppose that'd be 7 times 40, which is 280.
But what you're looking at, I think, is something different than what these statutes are talking about. Their penalties and taxes, etc., they've been waived for 7 years or for however long they've been in farming. Okay, they weren't late with their taxes. They filed what they were supposed to file, and what they decided now is no longer to be a farmer, so they're going to pay a penalty for taking that land out of farming use. And the $40 fee that you're talking about is a late fee, and that really should not apply to what they do. If they're late from the time that they sell their land, and if there's a prescribed time, which I haven't seen any place that there's a prescribed time that they have to call up the department and say, how much do I owe and where do I send it and how much it is. But basically what we're talking about as far as interest and penalties are put upon these people because they've taken the land out of farm use situations.
Okay. If you go up a little farther, Jack, it said, should the farm use land be sold, leased, or otherwise disposed of for uses incompatible with farm uses, then this will take effect.
Yeah. Okay, then I have one more question. Where you've changed, instead of 8%, you say equal to the prime rate as determined by the housing corporation and so forth. Has anybody asked, is it a problem? Because I know that fluctuates.
It does fluctuate, and I did discuss it with the assessor. And about the only thing, in fact, I got a telephone call, and I'm sure you did, because you told me that you had talked to him, that they wanted to tie it to a date, maybe the date of sale.
Yeah, he did say that.
Yeah. But as far as fluctuating, more and more contracts, business contracts, loans, etc., even home loans at this point, are now becoming the norm to have the fluctuating interest tied to the prime rate of interest of generally the institution that you've got the loan with. And your interest rate on a certain amount of mortgage money or business loan money, etc., will vary each month.
Well, that's the problem I see. And it may be perfectly all right, but the bookkeeping part of going back, say, for 6 or 7 or 5 years and going through each time, or do you see this as at the time that the land is sold? Maybe
at the time that the land is sold is what I understand.
Uh-huh.
You won't, you know, there has to be a certain amount of records kept on this land anyhow, yearly, on how much taxes were waived that the state will recompense the borough, et cetera, for. So there is a record already of how much this land was worth, even though the landowner didn't have to pay these taxes. And so at the time, they just go into their bookkeeping system and get a total for the last 7 years, and then they place the percentage rate of, and it's my understanding that Mr. Worley had asked you to put in the language of tie it to the date of the sale of the property.
Mm-hmm. But the way I read this now, it says, together with a simple rate of interest for the preceding 7 years, or I assume 5 years if it's not seven, equal to the prime rate. And I'm wondering if you got to take each year, decide what the property is worth and what the interest was worth was at the time, determined by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, then go to the next year and do that same thing, and then the next year?
It was my understanding that it was going to work at the time of the sale of the property, take the permit at that particular time that apply it now, that you're not having to, basically you have a lump sum of money for the primary time of sale and apply that percentage rate, which is what it was the way it happened to be. And apply that time of sale, so it would not be a bookkeeping nightmare.
Because I think we should probably make sure that's what it is. And Mr. Worley did ask me to tie it, and I don't know just how we want to do that, Sherry, to the date of sale. Can you?
Yeah, this is a work draft, and Tam is waiting for whatever other suggestions that you would like, and I'm sure she legally, you know, would not put in legally.
Okay, now I guess I got one more question. Back to that interest problem. The interest money goes to the borough. Now, what happens is when you exempt somebody, all of the rest of the people pick up the amount of taxes that are paid. You need $100,000 to run your borough. You exempt any segment of it, then the rest of the population pays those taxes. Now what happens when you pay these taxes and interest back? I guess it probably just comes out of that particular year's. In other words, that's income or taxes, and everybody else's would be left, huh?
I'm not quite sure I understand. Okay, go ahead, because you were into the
state. Since the state provides the borough with the tax money, there's not any difference.
Right.
It's just that when the person then becomes liable for those taxes, they recompense the state for that money, which the state has paid to the borough. And then the person gives the borough the interest, which theoretically the borough could have made if they would have had that money all along. Basically, though, it's a penalty.
No, but it should go to the state then.
That's right.
Because it was the state that
advanced the funds.
That advanced the funds. Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't go to zero.
Yeah. And I'm not so sure maybe it doesn't.
Well, it's balanced. It reads the extent of reimbursement for revenue loss under E. So I guess I'm not certain as to whether the state considers it in its lost revenue.
No, because if we read a little farther, payment by the owner shall be made to the state to the extent of the reimbursement for revenue loss under E of this section. If you go to the statute, E of this section is the state reimbursing the borough for lost revenues because it is ag land.
So they should get the answer.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's the way I read it. That's what would happen.
Well, I've asked enough questions for a while. If we can adjust that, make it set time certain. And as I understood you to say, if I might, you said the time certain should be January 1st.
You mean for the prime interest rate?
No, for the
assessment.
Assessment.
For the May 15th?
No. It still would be May 15th that they have to get. They can send in their filing any time between January 1st and May 15th. However, the assessor himself is tied to a January 1st assessment.
That's what I was trying to clear. So the assessment date is January 1st, the same as everybody else.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got a good job,
sir. Okay. So, according to Mr. Worley, he would like it this tied to a date to the interest,
so, yes, the prime rate of interest should be tied to the date of sale of the property.
Okay, so we need to add that in to the date of sale of property.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, so we have to need that for an amendment. And we would like to move that, I don't know.
Absolutely.
Is there objection to that? Hearing none. so ordered. And why don't we send that back to Rigo and have the drafting, and then we can bring it up again Monday if you've already heard it.
I have one more thing I'd like to bring up, and I don't know if I have any idea what the rest of the committee feels, but that last clause, if appropriations are less than the amount necessary for pulling the reimbursement, that it be prorated. And I know we're just getting started into this, and you know, it's a sort of a philosophical thing, you either believe it or don't, and more and more of our projects around the state, our different programs, these things are happening now. I just, you know, I guess you can think what you want to think, but in a way this clears it up in that, but nobody knows what they're going to get. And in this particular instance, for example, I'd hate to be the borough manager or the borough assessor and tell a guy that, yeah, that's what the law says, but you're only going to get 50% of that or 60% or whatever it is, because that's all the funds that are available. You know, to the borough. The boroughs are eventually, and the reason I'm bringing this question up is you remember earlier in the session we had some discussion about the senior citizens work. And I think we're just going to see more and more of this, and this is the first time it's really came by us, and I think we ought to think about whether we agree with that or don't agree with it.
As you know, as a philosophical argument,
yeah.
You know, if we say we're going to fund it, you know, we should fund it.
And that's what I feel.
Like. This here, however, is just a mechanism in case there is a short funding, which is becoming the case. And at least, you know, the borough could be left out in the cold if they're the last person to file for it. At least this way, they'll get something. And, I see what you're saying too. You know.
What I'm saying is that. As a legislature, as a state, we're saying that each and every borough has to do this. Then, if we don't take care of what I feel is an obligation as a legislature to fund enough money to take care of what we say they have to do, then the borough just winds up with a shortfall.
In other words, Jack, what you're saying is that, let's say that there were seven farms. Okay, there's only funding for five. Or seven boroughs.
Yeah.
There's only funding for five, so it would be prorated over seven boroughs.
Seven.
And so each wouldn't get their full, so neither would, none would be left out either.
Yeah, but what my problem is that you're...
I'm oversimplifying, I know.
No, you're not really. That's the way it is, but what's happening is we're making a law that says that they have to exempt them. And then we'll say that if you don't...
King's
Act. Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, we've got to tell you about the fine print on the bottom.
And I think where we're going to, I can just imagine what's going to happen to senior citizens when we do that. And
we might not live to see it.
On the borough, you know. And I don't know if...
Well, philosophically, it seems like we continually obligate ourselves for things and then can't fully fund them. So we end up with this type of situation.
Well, it wouldn't be so bad if you give the borough the opportunity to do this, and they could choose or not choose. But we're mandating they do it, and they do it, and then we say, but if we don't have the money, we don't get it back. I have a problem with that.
Yeah, I feel something for me, too. I don't know the answer.
I don't either.
Fund it. Or take it off the books, one of the two.
Okay, we will, 6:25 will go to drafting for that one change, and we'll bring it up again Monday. And we'll pass out Monday. And for Nilo to know that on Monday we'll be bringing up HJR 61, the constitutional amendment for cities to be governed as direct democracy, and House Bill 615, town meetings in home rural cities.
Direct democracy?
Real town meeting concept.
The what?
The town meeting concept, where everybody gathers in the local church and 51
yeah,
hands forward and 50 hands
like
against.
No,
so,
legislature's not really.
With that, I'll adjourn the meeting at 3:44.